you know, a couple of years ago, we went through the week by week by week to Shavuot, and I'm not going to do that this time. So I'm going to get back to Abraham, and we're going to the 22nd chapter, which has everything to do with this time of the year. That is the first season, Genesis chapter 22.
After these things, God tested Abraham and said to him, "Abraham," and he said, "Here I am." He said, "Take your son, your only son, Yitzhak, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah, and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I shall tell you." So Abraham rose early in the morning, saddled his donkey, and took two of his young men with him, and his son Yitzhak. And he cut the wood for the burnt offering, and arose and went to the place of which God had told him. On the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place from afar. Then Abraham said to his young men, "Stay here with the donkey. I and the boy will go over there and worship and come again to you." And then Abraham took the wood and the burnt offering and laid it on Yitzhak his son. And he took in his hand the fire and the knife. So they went both of them together. And Yitzhak said to his father Abraham, "My father." And he said, "Here I am, my son." He said, "Behold the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for a burnt offering?" Abraham said, "God will provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering, my son." So they went both of them together. When they came to the place of which God had told him, Abraham built the altar there, and laid the wood in order, and bound Yitzhak his son, and laid him on the altar, on top of the wood. Then Abraham reached out his hand and took the knife to slaughter his son. But the angel of the Lord called to him from the heaven and said, "Abraham, Abraham!" And he said, "Here I am." He said, "Do not lay your hand on the boy or do anything to him, for now I know that you fear God, seeing you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me." And Abraham lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him was a ram caught in a thicket by its horns. And Abraham went and took the ram and offered it up as a burnt offering instead of his son. So Abraham called the name of that place, "The Lord will provide." As it is said to this day, "On the mount of the Lord it will be provided." And the angel of the Lord called to Abraham a second time from heaven and said, "By myself I have sworn, declares the Lord, because you have done this and have not withheld your son, your only son, I will surely bless you, and I will surely multiply your offspring as the stars of heaven and as the sand that is on the seashore. And your offspring shall possess the gates of his enemies. And in your offspring shall all the nations of the earth be blessed, because you have obeyed my voice." So Abraham returned to his men, and they arose and went together to Beersheba. And Abraham lived in Beersheba. Now after these things, it was told to Abraham, "Behold, Milcah also has borne children to your brother Nahor: Uz, his firstborn, Buz, his brother, Kemuel, the father of Abraham, Amram, Chesed, Hazo, Pildash, Yidlaf, and Betuel. Betuel fathered Rebekah. These eight Milcah bore to Nahor, Abraham's brother. Moreover, his concubine, whose name is Reumah, bore Teba, Gaham, Tehash, and Maakah."
Any comments?
I suppose you're going to get into it, but Abraham says the Lord will provide for himself a lamb, but he provides for Abraham a ram.
Oh, we'll talk about that.
Yeah.
That's very important. Interesting, those words had to be changed for a reason. Any other comments? Any other thoughts, Illy?
It says on the third day he looked, it was afar off, but it must have been the same day that he went up, because he told the guys, and third day is life given.
Correct. He saw it, the place, on the third day. It didn't take it 3 days to get there. Okay, what's unusual about this story?
I always thought it was weird that God's asking Abraham to kill his kid.
Okay.
I always thought that was kind of, I don't know, it doesn't seem like something God would do.
What's even more strange is that Abraham was willing to do it.
Yeah.
I think it's an interesting contrast. You have Abraham, of course, but God says, okay, offer your son. And he almost does it, but doesn't, you know, obviously stops. Then you contrast that to Misha, the king of Moab, who, during his big siege against, Jehoshaphat was going against him, and he goes on the top of his mountain, off top of his wall, and actually kills his son. His son's, you know, screaming, no. And it's interesting that they're both doing the same thing. One actually follows through with it, then one doesn't. But it's bizarre, because if I was in Misha's, because since he's a Moabite descendant, Misha's perspective, okay, well, Abraham almost did this, so what's wrong with me doing it? But it's interesting, because the whole human sacrifice and what lesson is taught to those who are outside observers of Abraham? What do they see? What goes through their head? Not the descendants, but the people who are just watching and saying, he did it. Well, am I supposed to?
I thought it kind of strange at the end of the chapter to be talking about Abraham's brother, or was it his brother, I think. After these things, it was said, indeed, Milcah has borne children to your brother. I thought that was kind of strange, that whole section from verse 20 to the end.
Yeah, that has to do with the relationship to the death of Abraham's wife, which comes up, I believe, in the next chapter. And then it was Abraham had to find a wife for his son, who happened to have been a relative of his. Okay, maybe a grandnephew, I guess you might say, a grandniece with her, something of that nature. In the text, it says there that Elohim tested Abraham. Why was he wanting to test him for? What does that really mean? All this time now, his son's about age 20 or a little bit under. Technically speaking, when you use the word lad or young man, biblically speaking, it's someone under the age of 20. It could be a brand new baby, or it could be one under the age of 20. This one here, he had to be able to carry his wood, so we kind of knew he was a healthy young man to be able to carry the wood off of the donkey's back. And Abraham carried the fire. Remember that? So what is it that God did? Why was he going to do this? Yes.
Prove Abraham.
Prove Abraham. He already had said, because you believe me, you will be blessed. And all the world will be blessed through your seed. Right? He already was tested about the stars. You remember that? And so every test, quote, that God put Abraham through up to this point, he passed with flying colors. Now, we're at this particular point. Remember, I have told you, this is not so much the actions of Abraham, it's the actions of Elohim. Yes?
The peoples around him were all doing this, and he wanted to see if Abraham would act differently than the peoples around than it.
That's not what the Word of God says, though. We can't assume that everybody else was doing something different, and Abraham was doing that was righteous. Because remember, Abraham had to go to war. You remember? And he had to make company with two other men to have enough, large enough army to go to war. And they agreed with him. They went along with him on it. They were his friends. You don't bring your enemy into battle with you to fight an enemy. It doesn't work. You always take your friends. And these two particular men that were with him in the war were brothers. Yes.
think we can see the reason why. It's pretty much expressed in the two phrases that repeated twice, you know, your only son. That is what he was testing him on, because what was the original thing that Abraham is so credited for?
Right.
That he was going to bless him and through him
in Hebrew,
create this.
In Hebrew, the word only does not exist. The word only does not exist in Hebrew. So we have to kind of narrow it down and say, okay, he's talking about a particular son of his that he was told at the point of Abraham's birth, this is where the promise is going to go. Yes?
I can't find it specifically. I don't have my Hebrew reference, but this goes, my belief, this goes back to the covenant when God made with Abraham. He looked afar off and saw the day of the Lord and was terrified. And of course, God set up the foreshadowing for, will you give your son for, you know, as a sacrifice. Is that in that, you know, from what
this,
God,
at this point in time?
But from what God showed Abraham back at the covenant, that's where it comes from, the God will provide himself a lamb. Is that
okay? Yeah, I think we talked about. Abraham never gave a sin offering. Did you know that? He only gave a whole offering every time. Yes.
Because I'm reading verse 2 in the original Hebrew, and it talks about, in the English it says, take now your son, your only son whom you love, Isaac. And in the Hebrew it talks about your son, Ben. And then it says, Yaqid Ben. And Yaqid, according to this, does mean only child.
Well, yes. What I'm saying is, it's not the word only in English. We think it's only. He had another son. Okay? This particular son, it was the only son he was going to use for this particular reason. He didn't use the other son because the promise was not used through. This is the only son, putting that words, okay, that was given the promise before he was born. All right? So what I'm saying is that he had another son, but this does not mean that was the only one. In the sense that he never had any other, even before him, right? Remember when he had to kick out his the son, he said to his wife, that's evil, right? And God turned around and says, do what your wife told you to do. And he did, okay? It was not an easy thing for Abraham to kick out that son. It wasn't like, finally got rid of the brat. That wasn't his thinking. All right. So I want to clarify that when you use the word only, there were more than one, but yes.
Well, I guess in the same respect that Tammy's pointing out, and so did Jeff, is that the concept or use of that only term, well, in a manner of speaking, God has many sons, right?
Correct.
Well, he also has one only son, who wasn't the firstborn, wasn't the lastborn, he's somewhere in the middle. Well,
this
Abraham, Isaac, and
was
Jacob
was born for a reason.
Right. Abraham, Isaac, all of us have been sons of God in one respect or another.
Right, yes.
So it's that God has only one son, but he also has billions of sons. It's kind of a bizarre use of the word only.
Yeah,
but
so
still, the text.
That the rest the of them, he never does.
Right. It's the first, most important, the premier son.
This is the premier
right.
number one. This is
which,
number one.
Which that, as Jeff was pointing right. out, is the whole key or the whole point of the entire verse or scripture is that it's the quote premier son. That's obviously a reference to Messiah himself.
I want to get back to this thing about tested. What do you think it means though? In Exodus, God did something to the people. Remember the last holy day? I said, why did God put the Israelites through those seven locations? He wanted to test them out to prove whether or not they would obey him. It doesn't mean that every one of them disobeyed. Moses obeyed. Caleb obeyed. Joshua obeyed. And their family obeyed. So it's not necessarily a test in the sense of whether you are right or wrong. It's a test of what you are to be proved with. Why would God prove Abraham at this point in time? He's a very old man now. Why would he want to prove something? What do you want to test Abraham out for? For us to understand how God tests us?
I think it's to help ourselves, too.
Help yourselves, okay.
Well, I mean, you have to look at what he's able to do and what he needs help with
from the Spirit. Is he preparing the future generations for what is to come? Because the, you know, all the people in Egypt had their firstborn taken
by Pharaoh. So what is going to come?
Death of the firstborn.
By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called out of the place where he would afterward receive an inheritance. And he went out not knowing where he was going. All right? By faith, he sojourned in the land of the promise as a foreigner in a foreign country. And dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, and heirs with him of the same promise. This is the key thing you have to focus in on, and focus in very important on. Abraham was not an ordinary person. Yes, he was. But he focused in on a promise. Now, as we get into this 22nd chapter, we're going to find out what the promise was and to prove to whom the promise was given to. Ellie.
One of the reasons that he would have been tested is God is making a play here. He is walking people through steps because it was all written down, not for their benefit, but for our benefit. The parts of the play have to be given to humans to walk through it. One of the parts of the play is that the firstborn son dies. But God didn't have to take his life to do the play. He played right up to it and saved his life, but it was still written down. There are Jews that I know of that have come to the Messiah because of sitting in the synagogue on Yom Kippur, listening to this story about Abraham almost sacrificing his firstborn son. They saw the allegory. Somebody has to play the parts in the allegory. And he picked Abraham to do it.
Okay. Keep in mind, the issue is the promise. Right? Well, that's very important. I just got to read you there out of Hebrews that Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now, there's a phrase in the Bible. The Elohim of Abraham, the Elohim of Isaac, and the Elohim of Jacob. It doesn't go any farther. So we say a promise. Now, when the promise was given to Abraham, when he left his country, he was going to receive a promise. And in our mind, he received a promise of the land. Because on a human level, human flesh and blood, that's what we think the promise was. And the great land out there of Canaan was the promised land. Right? Well, let's back up here because there's something here in Hebrews that tells us that's not what Abraham was looking for. All right? He says, verse 10, and he waited for the city which foundations were builders and maker is Elohim. He's looking for what? I thought he was looking for a place to raise his cattle. I thought he was looking for a nice pasture land. I didn't know he was looking for a city that God created, that God formed, that God made. What did Abraham understand when God gave him that promise when he first said, leave your father and your mother and go into the land I'll tell you to go? What did he believe? Did he believe like flesh and blood human beings do today? Or did he actually believe something different? He believed in a promise. That promise was far greater. When he saw the stars, he said, ah, now I know. Those stars are what? These are your sons. These are the sons who believe the promise. These are the ones who believe the star. Now in Galatians, we won't go there today, it's very clear, he says that the Torah is our true teacher until the promise came. What was the promise that came that no longer is it Torah our schoolmaster? The Messiah came. That's the promise. So way back in the book of Genesis, it's telling us something we probably could never understand because we were in flesh and blood world. We were in the world of the 21st century. We're trying to figure out exactly what's been on back then. And here we have evidence from Abraham, the author of Hebrews. You can throw it out if you wish. But he said he's looking for a city and foundations whose builder and maker is Elohim. Are you looking for a city which the builder and the maker is Elohim or Carnegie Hall? How about who's the big guy makes, I don't know who makes buildings these days. Carnegie came in, he made steel. He's the one that brought, we have big buildings, powerful buildings because of Carnegie. Otherwise, we wouldn't have it. They didn't exist. He came up with a whole new process to make steel. And we said, wow, hey, where it worked. Right? Was that the city? Was he looking for Chicago as a city? New York was a city? Big, huge steel buildings, way high, can stand tremendous amount of storms, tremendous amount of earthquakes, tremendous amount of cavity. Oh, Carnegie is the God? No. So when we look at the promise, we say, now Abraham was tested. Why was he tested? Let's drop down here to verse 7 of the 11th chapter of Genesis. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac. Why? And he who had received the promises, plurality, offered up his only son, of whom it was said, in Isaac your seed shall be called. So you say, why did God do that? Was it to test Isaac out to find out whether or not Isaac was a good boy? Or did he test Abraham out to find out whether he was an honorable man that would do whatever God wanted to do? What was he testing him for? What is it there for us to see and understand? The incredible knowledge here, in my mind, is a man who had an incredible amount of confidence in God. And it says here that even if he killed his own son, what was going to take place? Accounting that God was able to raise him up from the dead, from which he would also receive him in a figurative sense. Yes.
Trust.
Yeah, unbelievable trust in our 21st century. We have to look back and say, what kind of a man was Abraham? We're coming at the end of the series with Abraham. We're moving quickly into the series of the other man named Isaac. There's over 15 or 16 or 20 different events in Abraham's life. Now ask yourself a real serious question. Why would he offer his son up and kill him? What was going through his brain? What was he thinking? An idiot going to kill his own son? He knew. He trusted. Proof of what? What did he have testing for? You don't believe I can raise you from the dead? No, he knew God would raise him up from the dead because God already made the promise when he was born. Remember when Sarah wanted Abraham to kick out the other guy? And God said something very important to Abraham. He says, through Isaac will be your seed. Yeah. Now, do you think he meant, I got Judah, I got Jacob, I've got Canaan, family of 12. Yeah, okay, I got them. They're all my kids, right? The Apostle Paul says, unto your seed, singular. Now, we've gone through Genesis all up to this point. We talk about a seed from the very beginning of Genesis chapter 1. We talk about a seed. Something's taking place here. So what was the test? To find out if Abraham would actually kill his son? The answer is yes. That's what the story is about. Why would he do that? He believed, trusted, and with no doubt in his mind that God was going to raise him up from the dead. How many of you have that? Now, Daniel talked about some in the past. At the place, did they kill their own son because they had confidence that God would raise them up from the dead? No. That was the error because they weren't given the promise. Yes.
Well, I think of back when Abraham is being introduced to the Lord. He introduced him as El Shaddai. He realizes this is the one that brought the flood. So I mean, he understands the reputation of who he's dealing with.
He understood the power of El Shaddai.
Yeah, like, he understood the power, he understood the authority, he understood. So as the relationship grows, you know, okay, the promise is a seed. He's faithful all the way back. He's going to be faithful all the way forward.
Now, this word has been changed with the word testing, been changed with the word proven, been changed to different terminology, including tempted. You know they tempted God 10 times? Same word. They tested God out 10 times. Same word being used. Same word is being used for checking out and seeing where your heart is at. Very important to know. We look back and say, what is it that we are supposed to learn from this? You have to ask yourself, inside yourself, this is one of the most ridiculous stories you ever read in the Bible. Who in his right mind would believe God, trust God, love God, obey God, would kill his own son? Stupid man. Where's the sadness on him? Let's get a psychiatrist out there. He got a problem. He also feared the creator of heaven and earth. He also loved the creator of heaven and earth. Can you do the same thing, same time? Yeah, you can do the very same, same time. It's not that hard, is it? Deal with your own mom and dad probably when you're growing up. So I want you to keep in mind what I just got to reading. That we have seen that Abraham wasn't looking for the things that we thought he was looking for. Even the word says, the land of Canaan is yours. That wasn't the promise. The promise was physical. The other promise was spiritual. He knew that. Yes?
The same also goes for Isaac, who...
Yeah, okay. Right, you got it. But see, and also to Jacob. Different kind of circumstances, but the same thing. And we have to say, what was the promise? And in Galatians, Paul tells you what it was. It wasn't the Ten Commandments, by the way. It wasn't the land of Canaan, by the way. It was not even the Torah, by the way. It was the promise. And I have not gone through, one of these days I'll do this thing, of certain 430 years, very, very important to know why it's 430. It nails it down to the exact location for exact purpose, for exact reason. But we're not going to go into that today. Bible didn't make a mistake. We make mistakes because we think the Bible's dates are wrong. Really? Let's talk about the actions of God and what His date is. God doesn't go by human counting. God doesn't go by human years. A day is like what? A thousand years. I mean, he doesn't even count that. I mean, we say, wait, there's 300 years missing. But no, it's there. You're looking at the wrong thing. Look what I am doing. Look what I am saying. Look what I am taking you. Look what I am doing to you. He's not saying, by the way, did you see the guy down the street? Watch him do it. And follow after him. And he walks off a cliff, walk off a cliff. Right? No. It's a promise. This is what this big thing is all about. Now when you go back to the very first time, the very first thing he did when Abram left is because of a promise. in you will all mankind be blessed. You think he's thinking physical? Do you think Abraham was thinking about, oh, he's got 10,000 kids? And his kids, his family are going to be the greatest family on the face of the earth. And his kids will be the most honorable face of the earth. The most loyal face of the earth. They're more loving God than anybody else. No. It was a promise. Now we're coming at that point where that promise comes to a very high, high pressure point. If I use that terminology today. He says, yes, verse 2. Right, verse 2, Genesis chapter 22, verse 2. Now take your son, your only Isaac, whom you have loved, and go to the land of Moriah. What's Moriah? What does it mean? Someone said what? God's seed. Now, how do you get that out of there? It's a breaking down of the word to see and the other word, Yah. Yod, hey, hey. Yod, hey, hey is the backside of that word. Mem means from. Right? So the first word is from. The last word is Yahweh, or Yahweh. And the one in between is, was chosen. Can mean chosen. From Yahweh, that's the chosen place. Now, did he know? And he said, now offer him there a whole offering on one of the mountains. So it was a mountain range that God chose. Abraham didn't choose him. And what do you think went through Abraham's mind? I mean, just stop and think for half a second. I want you to take Isaac. And I want you to offer him up as a whole offering. Amongst those mountain range up there and one particular mountain I want you to go to. And if I have chosen that location, I have chosen that mountain. That is the mountain you will do it at. Now, what was so important about this mountain? That doesn't look very important here. Okay, John.
Where Solomon built the temple.
Where it was on the threshing floor of a certain Jesuite, Gypsite, who was on a threshing floor. The angel came to destroy and kill and kill and kill. He came to that threshing floor. And what did the Lord say? Don't go any farther. No blood was spilt on that floor, the threshing floor, with the very same exact location where the temple was built. How long ago was it built? Thousands of years later? 2,000 years later? God already chose it. Now, very famous in this thing, now we have to watch and pay attention to what Abraham was able to see and understand. But I'm going to tell you, put down these notes here, 2 Chronicles 30, verse 3, verse 1, is the same place in which David had prepared the threshing floor. And that's where the angel came to do the killing. And the Lord said, no more. You can go there. Also, it's in 1 Corinthians chapter 21, verse 15. Don't have to go there. You write these things down. Now, it's First Chronicles chapter 3, 1 Chronicles chapter 22. 21, rather. 1 Chronicles chapter 3. 2 Chronicles chapter 3. 1 Chronicles chapter 21. All right. I'm going to read part of 1 Chronicles chapter 21. Way down there in verse 28. At that time, when David saw Yahuwah had answered him, on the threshing floor of Oman, the Jebusite, he sacrificed there, and the tabernacle of Yahuwah and the altar of the whole offering, which Moses had made in the wilderness at that time at the high place in Gideon. That's where the tabernacle was built, in a high place, in a place called Gideon, on the other side of the river. All right. Now, it's on this side of the river. That place. But David could not, verse 30, could not go before it to inquire of Elohim, for he was afraid. The sword of that angel. Powerful man. Back to Genesis. I need to tell you, these places, the same location was picked way back during the time of Abraham. That precise location. Of course, it says Abraham took, Sal, got the two young men, and took stuff. And it's a place called the whole offering. We talked about this before. Now, it says here, interesting here, verse 4, which my wife brought out. And it mentions the terminology, a very strange terminology. They're on their journey, okay? Then on the third day, what happened? Then on the third day, Abraham lifted up his eyes and saw the place. That literally means the spot, the exact location. He saw the mountain, the one place where he's supposed to go and sacrifice his son as a whole offering. Now, let me ask you a question. When you sacrifice a whole offering, what do you do with it?
Burn it all up.
You what?
You burn it all up.
You burn it all up. That's quite a powerful thing, isn't it? Your son is going to die, and you have to bound him. Now, it's fascinating, during the time of Messiah, and the high priest and came to get him, and the men had to bound Yahshua. They bound him so he couldn't fight back. I know everything you see in television, you see all the team, he didn't think he was bound at all. He was bound. He couldn't move his arms, he couldn't move his legs, he couldn't run. He couldn't do anything. Just like Isaac couldn't do anything. But they don't show you that in movies because they don't, I don't know why, but it says they bound him. That really means by leather. In Hebrew, that means to be bound with leather. Now what happens? You're bound with leather. Well, with leather. With leather, it gets tighter and tighter and tighter, especially when it gets wet, right? Or your sweat, and it gets tighter and tighter. It swells, it dries, it gets wet, it gets tighter and tighter and tighter. So what's this third day? What's so important to God about this third day? Why was it so important to He on the third day? What was it to tell us? What's the pattern with three days? Two things happen on the third day. Either you're dead or you're alive. It's one or the other. You're dead or you're alive. That's a pretty powerful statement, isn't it? Now, I'll give you some examples. In Genesis chapter 1, something happened on the third day. Remember what happened the third day? Everybody going back to chapter 1 and find out what took place on the third day. That's fine. Go back there and take a look and see what happened on the third day.
Well,
Dry planted. What happened before is day number two? Water was separating. What happened to day one? Water was all over the entire place. No land being seen. No land whatsoever. We paid attention to it, and then he said there was light. We forgot. Wait a minute. The whole planet was covered with water. Billions and quadrillions of tons of water. Higher than any mountain there was. And now he separates the water. And we think, oh, he separated the water and created the heaven up there so the whole world could live in a canopy, you know? And then, you know, and then the third day, and oh, up comes the plants. We think of the 100% physical world. You think God created the earth for physical reasons? No, he created it to have life on it. And so the first thing, when the water parted on the land, now there was the sea and there was land. And the land came up out of the water. What happened to the land? Life plant became alive. All right? So on that third day, the first day was death. All water all over the entire planet. Nothing was alive. And then he had to resurrect the earth out of that water. So he separated the water. He divided it. And he divided the water on the earth to two locations. One sea, one dry land. And the third day, life came. All right? The pattern is identical. We won't go to the Messiah today. Incredible story there, why he was in the grave. The first day, second day, and the third day, same pattern. We go in here now. We don't have to go any farther. It's already said that place is called the place, which was Moriah. Means from Yahweh, Yahuwah. Yahuwah chose the place. Of course, we went on here. I don't know how far I'm going to get on this chapter. I thought I'd finish the day for sure. And then Abraham said something very fascinating, verse 5. Did you read that? Verse 5, chapter 22, verse 5. Who will come?
Abraham and Isaac.
We will return. Now, was he kind of hoping? Or was he kind of wishing? Or he didn't want the two young men to be upset with him? He knew! That's what I'm telling you. This is a fantastic story. And the young men didn't know what the thing was about. Isaac didn't know what the thing was about. But I tell you, when Isaac was there and realized he was the one and only one, did Isaac lose faith in Elohim? No. And that's the point we don't see quite completely clear. But, you know, here's a young man under the age of 20. He's going to be killed by his father. Of course, he says, land will provide. Now, here's a question that came up. And it says, verse 7, when Isaac asked him the question, he says, Dad, the lamb, where is it, Dad? Now, that word lamb, by the way, does not mean a sheep. It does not mean a goat kid. It means any young animal that's of the herd that can be sacrificed to God. So when you read why we have Passover, either you take it of the lamb or the goat, because the same word being used. So now we have this thing, which is translated as the lamb, because that's the most common word, because we know what it says there in from John.
He takes away, the Lamb takes away the sins of the world. We understand that point. But something else took place. What took place? And he said, my son, verse 8, he says, Elohim will provide or will see to it for himself a goat or a lamb. You translate it one way or the other, both being the same thing. For a whole offering. And so that satisfied him. Okay, Dad. I have to go find a lamb. I have a goat. We'll find. Where are they on here? And so they came to this spot, a thing called place there, verse 9. It means the same thing at the spot, the exact location, which Elohim had told him. God said, that's the spot. And so he knew exactly where to go. And he saw the spot a long ways off. So now they're up there climbing this mountain. They're doing their job. By the way, this thing says, and he bound Isaac, verse 9. This is the only place you'll find it written in Hebrew. There's no other place in all of the Tanakh that uses that word. And I said to myself, what does it mean? This is where a binding means to bind with leather. You know, in English, you have this one, the woman bound the ankle of one of the kids being born. That's not the word. He just tied. Different word. Doesn't mean the same thing. That's the English translation. So what do you think was going through Isaac's mind? Here he is, bound. What was he thinking? Was he scared? Okay. Did he trust his father?
Yes.
Did he trust his father's God? Yes. And that's what we have. You find us later as we go through Isaac. He's known as the fear of God. Fear of God means also respect toward God. Because what took place to him? At a very young man. It's 20 or under. It's under the age of 20. When they use the word lad in the Tanakh, it really means any boy under the age of 20. You were not allowed to go to war unless you're 20 years old. Okay? So if you're 19, you don't go to war. You're still a boy. You're still under your father's care. Correct. Today we want to get out from under our dad at age 10, 15, 20. No, what age we want to get out? Well, depend. If you're very dependent upon your father, you never want to get out from under him. He takes care of you. So it's all way to matter of how you are, you know. So let's go on. And then Malach Yahuwah called out to him from heaven. He wasn't on the ground. He wasn't near him. He wasn't around about. Called down from heaven above him. He said, Del. And he said, Ani. Means, here I am. And he asked for Abraham. He said something very strange. Verse 12. What do you think he meant by that? Well, let's read it. Let's read it so we can get to understand it. Do not lay your hand on the lad or do anything to him. For now I know that you fear Elohim, since you have not withheld your son from me. Why do you say that for? Why did he say that for?
Now he knew that Abraham was faithful.
Now he Yeah, it's a proof that he knows that Abraham is very loyal and faithful. Abraham was loyal and faithful before he went there. Have you ever been tested, ever in your life, to a point where you must do something, whether it's of God or anybody else, I don't care, and you didn't want to do it, but you had to do it because it was the right thing to do? Now, if it affects your child, how many of you have done the right thing even though it brought harm to your child? Different question, isn't it? Personally, yeah, you can probably take it. What does it bring harm? What do you say? No, do not even harm him. That's a pretty heavy test, don't you think? What do you think it did to Isaac? I mean, this affected Isaac, right? It affected Isaac tremendously. What do you think went through his mind? Isaac knew the promise. He knew the seed was going to pass from him to his son. He knew that because he believed the promise. So was the test just for Abraham? Or was it also for Abraham's, listen carefully, Abraham's seed? When the Messiah came to the point of death, how many times did he pray to take this death from me? 3 times. Do you see a parallel? Incredible parallel. When you come to this point, something took place, and all of a sudden there was a, not a lamb or a little goat, but a ram. Why a ram? Why not a little sheep? Why not a little kid goat? Why a ram that has horns? In this case, a wild ram caught in the mountains caught in the thicket. His horns caught in the thicket. I see pictures, by the way, of people trying to show he was caught in the thicket. They never had the ram's head into the thicket. They had the ram's leg caught. But it says his horns are caught. Okay, what's the nature of a horn of a ram? They lower their head. That's full throttle. Look out of your way. You're getting hit with them, Daniel.
Rams are traditionally, rams have always symbolized prophet. A ram symbolized a prophet. That's what it has traditionally in the Bible. Has always been used that way.
Got that.
So in this application, the ram that is caught by his thorns. That a prophet is going to be caught by his thorns.
Prophet's going to be caught, and he will not be able to get out. He is, in a sense, bound by the thistles. Do you remember somebody, some time ago, something was put on top of his head, thistles? You remember? Maybe it's just a coincidence. I don't know. He couldn't get out of it. That was it. Now, biblically speaking, a ram represents... Go ahead.
Is there a picture of Sahatan?
Of who?
Satan. Is there a picture there?
No, no picture of Satan whatsoever. Satan would be a picture of an unclean animal. This is a clean one. A ram always represents something that has power. Tremendous amount of strength. We had this in the book of Daniel, I guess it is, right? Where a ram, so heavy, he just destroyed the other empire. I can't remember right offhand the other empire was. Go ahead.
I think Absalom was caught by the thicket and his hair. And,
oh, yeah, he was not a ram.
But he
remember, what Daniel was saying, a ram represents someone who is a prophet. Prophets of God are strong.
not physically. Because what did God do to Ezekiel? Yes, I think it was him. I'm going to make your head a strong thicket that can crack into it. Yes.
Absalom wasn't a prophet, but he was a prophecy. He got his head stuck in thorns and he
hung on a tree.
I
don't want to go there. I'm going to try to get to this point, get past verse something here, 13. Now, in the translation, the word ram has been translated to different words. And you can't make it always ram in those locations. Sometimes it's translated as a pillar. Interesting. Also, listen carefully. I'm going to use a Hebrew word. All right? Maybe I won't. I also represents a doorpost. You know, we put this mezuzah. That's the Hebrew word for doorpost. So you put your doorpost upon your doorpost, you put the doorpost upon a doorpost. That's literally what you're doing. That's what the word means, doorpost. Now, what does a doorpost do? It keeps able for the door to able to hang and open up and go in and go out. That's what a doorpost do, right? We wouldn't have a doorpost if there was no door. You just have some posts. They maybe hold up the wall or ceiling, but this is a beast post door. And like Daniel has said, it represents a strong man, a leader, or a chief. Or, and there's one place in scripture, it's translated as a mighty tree. Very same word for the ram that's caught in a thicket. A mighty tree. Why would it be translated as a mighty tree for? Isaiah 61, verse 3. That's very interesting. And so when you look at the Messiah, he was the one representing the ram. I'm going to read this in Young's Little Translation for a while. You can follow along. Verse 3. To appoint two mourners in Zion, to give to them beauty instead of ashes, to an oil of joy instead of mourning, covering of praise for a spirit of weakness. And he is calling to them trees of righteousness, planting of Yahuwah to be beautiful. Now, if you want to translate already, he's calling them rams of righteousness. That's what the word means. You want to translate that word into righteousness. So when Daniel said it always represents a prophet, always prophets has to be righteous. If a prophet's not righteous, he's not a prophet. Becomes unprofitable. Oh, there are some unrighteous prophets. Now, there are examples where they lost their prophecy because they were no longer righteous. Anyway. And then he said, of course, verse 14, that God said he will provide. And he did. What did he provide in that place? A ram. Is that hard to understand that? Is it hard to picture that ram represented the Messiah? It shouldn't be. I hope not. Hold on for just a second. You said 3 days, right? Let me put number 2 down here. You put number 1 down here. All right. So, if you read chapter 22, verse 1, God spoke to him on the first day. I want you to kill your son. Then on the second day, they were on their journey. What happened on the second day? Doesn't tell us, does it? And then came the third day. And he saw. On the third day, Isaac was to be killed.
Isn't that interesting? The third day he was to be killed. Give you something to think about. I'm not going to say any more. And because he did this, now it says there, verse 15, the angel came to him a second time. So the first time he came, and we have day 1, 2, and 3, and Isaac being spared by the death of the ram. Or death of a righteous ram. Death of a righteous, powerful man. Right? Or the death of a prophet. He said to him, by myself I have sworn, says Yahuwah, because you have done this, and have not withheld your son, blessing I will bless you, and multiplying I'll multiply your descendants. Now this is a different blessing than the very first one. This is in your seed. The world will be blessed. The stars of heaven and the sands of the seashores and the descendants shall possess the gates of the enemies. This is a different promise. This is what he came the second time. Wait, doesn't tell us what day he came the second time. Doesn't say he came the fourth day, the fifth day, the sixth day. We don't know. All right? Now we come here, and of course he says, now, verse 18, in your seed all the nations of the earth shall be blessed, because you have observed my voice. That's one thing that you will multiply, your descendants will multiply, they will increase, and they'll have power over the enemies, they'll have power around the world. They'll be able to power the gates of your enemies. They can't get in or out of their territory unless your descendants permit them to get in or to get out. You know any countries face first had that? Anyway. Now this one here, because you have obeyed me, your seed, all the nations of the earth, will be blessed. Chapter 21, your enemies are going to be cursed. Verse 17, your enemies are going to be cursed. They can't get in or out of their country without your descendants giving them the permission to go in or out of their country or any military place, any power whatsoever. They had no power. The rest of the world had no power over the descendants of Abraham. Regardless how you like the descendants of Abraham or don't like the descendants of Abraham, that's what God said. Next verse is different. This is the one the Apostle Paul quoted. In your seed, singular, once again. Are you being blessed because of that seed? Yeah. Well, I guess maybe I did finish this whole chapter. It's been amazing. Any thoughts, any ideas, any input? Do you realize how powerful this whole scene, the 22nd chapter, was about? Did Abraham understand that it was going to have to take someone being resurrected from the dead in order for the seed to continue on? Or he was just hoping?
I can use some help from people in here. I'm seeing a connection back in Genesis 14 with Melchizedek, when he's seeing Melchizedek, the bread,
right,
and the wine,
bread and the wine,
and the picture of the promise there already. So this is just another witness to that.
Yeah, another witness at the top. There's so much witnesses in about Abraham. It's incredible. Now, I'll ask you a question. This is very important, because I'm just going to end, right? Did the seed that was promised to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, did that seed ever die? Yes. Yes. The Messiah died. Yahshua died. He was killed badly, butchered, beaten up,
That's the seed of the promise. Did he die? Yes. Now, what did the Apostle Paul say? And Jesus even said that you have to die first before you can come back and have life. Now, because of that seed came back in life by the power of the Creator of heaven and earth, as you would see here in chapter 22, what kept the life, a seed alive, was the death of the ram. Our Lord and Savior did die. And this is the reason why the Bible, New Testament Bible, is full of remembering his death. Remembering the death of the seed that was promised to Abraham. Okay? Maybe I'm overpowering myself here, but do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
It's not that hard to understand. It's written right there in the 22nd chapter of Genesis. We look at these things with Abraham, so in a physical world, and he never... Hebrews. He was looking for a city that no man made. Way back, you know. Way back there, in the old days when they still lived in tents, and people lived in caves, and they had to knock over a woman, pull hair... No, that's a theory of evolution. And that, but you understand what I'm saying. Sometimes we think those people back there were just too dumb to understand what's going on. And yet the Creator of heaven and earth has told those dumb people exactly where you are going. Right? He's telling these old people. That's why it's so important. What are we supposed to learn from the life of Abraham? Is how great Abraham was, or how powerful the Word of God is, and he fulfills his Word all the way to the end of the death of his own son.